Hi and welcome. Who's here?
It's Robin.
Robin? Welcome. I'm glad you could join us. How's everything going for you?
Everything is going well. Thank you.
Excellent.
I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, yeah. It's really great to catch up. So is everything okay family-wise and that you're able to be here?
Yes. We're in a period of time where my mother-in-law is acclimating to the new place, and so we're not able to be in touch the way we normally are. But I am so I feel very good and optimistic about this place. It's just a wonderful place, and we're so lucky to have found
that's
it.
Super.
Yeah.
Have you been able to access the playback and the material to kind of stay up to date? Where are you in that?
Yes, I'm on the third recording. I thought last Monday we didn't have class.
We didn't.
And okay, because I see I see recording for the 23rd, and I thought, oh, no, I missed another class.
No, we did not meet. I had
an
international webinar that lasted quite a while that was live that I had to do, but we didn't meet. So this is our class four.
Okay, very good. Okay.
So, welcome, and would you do a brief introduction of yourself, since this is your first time, about your background, your interest in coaching, and what led you to our collaboration together here in this group, and what you'd like to do with this training?
Yes. Well, my name is Robin Primo, and I work for the federal government in human resources, and I've been advising and counseling for my whole career, and coaching seemed to be a natural outgrowth and something that I got very interested in. And so I recently completed the Coach Training Alliance coaching program. And
Who was your instructor there?
Dr. Linda. Jackie. Coach Jackie.
Dr. Jackie. Okay. Yeah.
Jackie Black. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And so when I saw this, your program, it really struck a chord with me in terms of having an actual program with boundaries and guidelines to walk somebody through. And I love the context of it being in a story and storytelling and how much of that we do consciously and how much we don't even understand, you know, subconsciously. And so I thought, I would love to incorporate this into a coaching practice, but for me right now, I feel like it's perfect for me personally to go through this and examine areas of my life and just become more aware as a person and then integrate it into coaching.
Mm-hmm. Well, terrific. And I think you're in an exceptional position to be able to apply the tools and methods and principles in what you do and the advising, counseling, and the whole HR area. You know, it's something I greatly appreciate, and I work with HR departments, corporations, to create an internal mentoring program, often within the Department of HR. Use the principles of mentor coaching to do that. So I think you're in an excellent position to apply this as well and have a huge impact. So welcome. It's great to have you.
Great. Thank you.
Well, let's catch up. Emily, what's going on?
Hi. I just arrived from
Wins.
I read the entire I was going to the maps in the module 3, and just really kind of reading over all that and resonating with all that. So I've been working on just reading through all the notes.
All right, super. And any challenges or questions that you have, either from the material or your work with clients or any aspect, we have a bit of time. We have a smaller class, which I love because we have more time for discussion, and any issues that you have either from the curriculum or from what we talked about in the past or especially from your client work, we can do that now and each at the beginning of each class and look at vignettes. A little bit later, we'll do the the case study, the roadmap case studies for each of you, either on yourselves or your clients. You each have an example of that, and you have a link to the ebook that has 32 different case studies in the different areas of life, wellness, career, money stories, wellness stories, so that you can see what some of those look like. So, go ahead. Anything else?
I put a question mark as I was reading through the module three. There's a section under coaching interactions.
Yeah.
And it said at the end, train and redirect. For example, give a model of how to handle conflict, including communication skills. I was wondering if you could give an example of that.
Okay. Now, first, to frame that, you're a little bit ahead, but that's no problem.
Oh, am I? Okay.
Yeah. Module 2 has step 5, and that's where we're going to start today.
Okay.
Seminar 4, module 2, step 5. But an example would be if someone is using a model that's outdated or some assumptions or a belief that may not be working, we may simply give an example. Here's an application of something that would illustrate this. What we know now from neuroscience is that in conversational intelligence, in any conversation, the first 4 or 5 words that we use to begin a conversation can boot up a specific mindset in the listener. For example, if in the first few words the listener hears something that is critical or judgmental or pejorative or authoritarian, it boots up a mindset that's mediated by cortisol and adrenaline. So trust becomes an issue, someone becomes more on guard, and everything that subsequently follows is processed through that system. Now, consider another possibility. Someone begins with an empathic resonance, a model of connection and collegiality, the kind of model we use in coaching of collaboration. In the first few words, someone perceives that, and a totally different mindset is booted up that's mediated by oxytocin, the chemical, the neurochemical of connection and bonding. And that processes everything that follows. So if I'm working with an executive, I may help them understand how the listener is hearing and processing what they say, and how they can be much more effective in a collaborative model than telling somebody what they should do and what they shouldn't do and how they may get it wrong. So that would be an illustration. Now, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is an example that what you described, we will get to that, of the number of things that we do in mentor coaching in addition to asking powerful questions. Now, we usually think about asking powerful questions, and we know that asking the right question has more power than giving people the right answers, and that appreciative inquiry can get you much better results than seeking out and solving problems. But what led to that list of things of what we do in addition to asking powerful questions was an experience that I had. There was a group of very seasoned, very experienced coaches, all of whom had been coaching for like about 5 years or more. They had great practices. They met once a month to review cases, to do continuing education, to do various things. And they asked me to be a guest and to comment on a case presentation. And when I heard the case presentation began, and as it unfolded, what was striking to me, and all of these coaches had trained at the same coaching institute. So they all had had similar. Now, they had had different mentor coaches, perhaps, but they had all trained at the same institute. So what I heard was the coach was only asking questions, that all of that list of things that you see that, you know, we do various things. We challenge, we story bust, we give information at times, we advise, we do things to regulate states of mind. We do all kinds of things. There's a list probably there of 9 or 10 things that we do in addition to coaching. So I ask, you know, I noticed that you only ask questions. Now, they were powerful questions. They were great questions, but why only questions? And there was a pause, and the presenter said, well, that's how we were taught. We're supposed to only ask questions of our clients. And I said, is that what each of you really do? And they began to talk. Said, no, well, no, we really don't, because we think that some other things work better, but that's what we're supposed to do. I said, well, let me disabuse you of those notions. And I listed in that brief space 9 or 10 things that we do in addition to asking powerful questions. And keep this in mind when you come to that. So it's a little bit early because we're still in the roadmap, but think about all the things that we do as catalysts to help someone get to their goal. There may be times we advise, we give information. Sometimes we story bust or challenge or look at blind spots or any number of things that we do to help someone move forward. So those are just some examples of all the things that we do. Sometimes we simply brainstorm with the client. If you were to hear any of my mentor coaching sessions with clients, just for 2 or 3 minutes, you'd probably conclude that, well, it was a brainstorming session. We're both, you know, throwing things on the wall to see if anything sticks and makes sense. So that's a good question. Now, does that really answer your question?
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Okay, super. Paola, what about you? Is Paola with us from Brazil today? I'll check back. Anything else that you would like to talk about or discuss or ask about before we move into the material?
We're on step 4, is that what you said? Step 4?
Step 5, map changes. Seminar
map
4.
Okay. I see. Okay.
And your outline, hopefully you've printed your outline.
Yeah, I have that.
On the side. Okay, great. Okay. Yeah, it may have been confusing that we didn't meet last week. And
Right. That's what I'm confusing.
We're on seminar 4.
Yeah.
Today.
Okay.
Okay, anything else before we move into our material? Okay, well, we've discussed the first 4 steps. Recognize authorship, own your present story, assess the storylines and plot, and decide what to change. We're going to next talk about step 5, mapping changes. Insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something that they're struggling with, yet they haven't changed? Underlying causes are always present for any problem, often complex, multi-determined causes. But we usually don't find it beneficial to ask a why question of a client, because that moves back into the past. It moves to a different part of their brain, more to a cognitive observer, and it often makes a closure that may not be accurate, but there will always be an answer. But the why is not as important as the coaching approach to use causes, feelings, and history as information to focus on now and plan for next. And at times, simply doing what is effective can dissolve barriers. Now, people need nudges, which is one of the things we do. In addition to asking powerful questions, we will nudge someone to do what they are reluctant to do, perhaps. And people need nudges when they're least likely to make good choices. For example, for decisions that are difficult or rare, where there's just not that much practice, or for which they don't get feedback, when they have trouble translating the challenge into understandable terms, or when they persist in recreating the old story, which etches it further in the brain each time. So, to map changes, there are six crucial elements, I believe, to map changes. We'll talk about how to understand and incorporate each of these six, which is really an outline to master your life and other stories and help clients do the same. One, regulate states of mind. Now, this is so important that we're going to devote an entire module and an entire seminar to this, but this is kind of a précis, a little bit of a foreshadowing. Here's an example. Dr. Vernon Smith won a Nobel Prize in economics in part by demonstrating how market bubbles are created. He did a series of trading experiments with economics graduate students. They were informed the fair value of a security, the actual value of a security, as $3. So these traders knew the actual worth of a security. It's a significant advantage over the normal Wall Street trader situation, because a stock is determined not by intrinsic value, but by what somebody's willing to bid for it. So what happened in the price bidding when somebody knew the exact value? They still ran the price up significantly past the $3 mark. When other traders in the experiment stopped paying a premium, the laboratory market crashed. In the second experiment, the same group formed another smaller bubble. The first time, it got up into the high $5 value range with most of the groups that they did this study in. And the second time with each of the groups, it got into the low $4. So it was still significantly above $3. When Dr. Smith repeated the experiment with finance professors and other economic specialists, even more senior and more experienced people, they formed the same kind of bubbles followed by the same crashes. Theirs weren't as extreme, but the same process occurred. Now, bubbles are formed by optimism and collective tilt. In other words, an altered state of mind. Getting in a feedback loop, increasing prices stimulate optimism, cause more buying with price increases until the bubble, the state of mind, shifts. And think about the analogy, the tech rally, the market crash of mortgage-backed securities. It's the equivalent of the child who says, you know, the emperor doesn't really have any clothes on. Now, this seemingly irrational force that overrides logic and knowledge and causes us to believe that rising prices will continue to rise indefinitely, or at least as long as we're bidding on them, it's normal human behavior. It's the way our minds and brains work. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and then how we process information and how we respond. We each have a set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention, confidence. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and to know which state works for what purpose. In other words, creative writing versus editing, two different states of mind, two different parts of the brain. Brainstorming versus completing a project. Here's a really simple example of a state of mind and how it can create a different function. If you take a rat and put it in a maze, you can teach the rat to get to the cheese, and it can go again and again. Now, if before you teach the rat, you inject it with just a little bit of amphetamine, in other words, you create an altered state and simulate a stress-like state, you can still teach the rat to get to the cheese, and it can go again and again. But when you take away the amphetamine, the rat can't find the cheese. It can literally, in that maze, die of starvation, even though it has in a part of its brain how to access the information to get to the cheese. You re-inject the amphetamine, it immediately goes to the cheese. State-specific learning and state-dependent memory. Now, when someone's in an emotional state, they're overbalanced toward right brain response, the feeling brain. In extreme stress, the emotional brain hijacks the intellectual logical brain and holds it hostage. Think about a very simple application here. How many times have you had the experience of wanting to think of somebody's name, for example, and you know that person's name, you've said it a dozen times, it's right on the tip of your tongue, but you just, for some reason, you can't do it. There's a block. Then you forget about it. Later on, you relax, and boom, the name comes to mind. That's state-specific memory. So when your emotion hijacks your right brain and hijacks your left brain, rather, and holds it hostage, what do? Your brain is working against you. When you're in any state of upset, the first order of business is to regulate state of mind to restore a cool state, a balance of left and right brain. Poker players call it tilt. When you lose big or win big, you tend to be more emotional and inclined to play your last hand or your leftover emotion. So with any kind of tilt, break the state of mind. Step away from the table, poker or conference or dinner. Take a walk. Wash your hands and face with cold water. Breathe deeply. Take a time out. Even sleep on it. Let me think about that and get back to you is a decision. Now, we're going to explore this significantly more in Session 6, Master States of Mind. And I have a tool I'm going to send to you before Session 6 that I believe is really going to be useful in terms of helping you work with clients with issues around state of mind. So the brain equation for good decisions is right brain, emotional brain, plus left brain, logical and intellectual, equals a balanced decision. Now, that's a way oversimplification, but you'll get the idea. So your response to a mistake affects the quality and the effectiveness of your next experience. So that's one of the reasons regulation is so hard. The number two element to map changes. The power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects a frequency. All the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of hundreds of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So, if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, the channel, change your thoughts. The bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over. According to quantum physics, we each generate energy frequencies or vibrations. We project energy in our emotions and thoughts that are the source of what and who we attract, as well as the basis of our sense of well-being. The quantum Zeno effect, Z-E-N-O, says, the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. The brain rewires. Now, this concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is way more effective than a problem focus. The problem focus re-enters the old network, the solution focus creates an activation of new pathways in the brain. These brain connections literally become mind maps, and then that subsequently influences the reality that we see. Now, there's an article on my website under the articles tab on the homepage called Toward Brain Hardware Optimization. It's an explanation of the different work and performance styles and how different personality styles can come into play. The article, I believe, right next to that, right under it or over it, is The Neuroscience Behind the Secret. And that's referring to the film, The Secret. And that's what I'm really highlighting here, because there's more of an explanation of what I'm describing here about the neuroscience of the secret, because that takes into account what we just described about quantum physics and energy field. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on solutions, but already existing circuitry is already etched when you focus on existing problems. And this is why people can get stuck in therapy. And this is why usually a why question, why did you do this, or why did you, it is something that doesn't work, because it puts people back in their old pathways. Neuroscience validates the reality that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts that's most beneficial, but a focus on awareness of choice. And the law of attraction is based in neuroscience. If you lay, for example, if you lay a nail and a paperclip side by side, nothing happens. When you take a magnet, though, and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paperclip. Well, why is that? The molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction and creates a polarity. The same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. So, what are you doing with your personal energy field? Each moment, how do you align and focus it? The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. Now, in the film The Secret, there is the repetition of the three-part mantra: ask, believe, and receive. I would challenge that, because I don't think the third part, receiving, is the passive result, as there's an implication. In other words, the law of attraction won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway. It won't align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that one. Or manifest a pizza. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story that you want. So my grandmother offered, my favorite grandmother, offered her critique of the film The Secret 4 decades before it was released. She said, "Wishes don't wash dishes." So I would suggest a revision. Instead of ask, believe, receive, ask, believe, and create. The ABCs. The paradox is that we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on, because that's the alignment of the energy field of the brain. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Now, the way this works at a brain level, in addition to energy field, your unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. It's kind of like saying a print or a negative in the old style camera is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. So the power of focus is whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing, not just the reversal of something negative. You know, I want to get out of debt. Well, the focus is on debt. I want to lose weight. The focus is on overweight. These are not going to get you what you want. Align your energy field. Now, here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray said it very simply. Your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, "I can't afford it," your subconscious mind works to make it true. Notice, for example, which people worry about illness. Who talks about pains and disorders? The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So, put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities instead of problems. Desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it. It's to add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you don't, when you focus on what you do want, what you don't want falls away. It's kind of like your lap when you get up to walk. So the energy that we're talking about isn't the energy of stamina, as in tired versus refreshed, but of energy field, this invisible, very real connection. And think for just a moment how you can instantly read someone's energy field as soon as you see them or they walk into the room. You know immediately whether they're warm and inviting, cold or stay away, charismatic, energetic, shut down. Quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy fields, there's a collective energy field. And we can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called this a unified field theory. Basically, he said, the human mind and body is a bundle of energy that interacts with another person as a bundle of energy, or an entire group with that collective field of energy. This is how we can read people, focus our choices, determine the flow of our future. So, how do you tap into this collective field? We project energy frequencies, and like a magnet, we attract what we focus on. If we focus on the negative and on problems, that's what we'll create. If we focus on the positive and on solutions, that's what we align ourselves to create. Now, the addendum to this is that actions have to be in alignment with thinking and focus. Negative or positive results don't just happen, but they come about as the result of action. And that's why I emphasize the ABCs, ask, believe, and create. Consistent negative thoughts send negative chemicals into the body. We know this now. And dis-ease results. So when you're grounded and centered, and think about these as physics terms. When you're grounded and centered with yourself, it opens doors and creates synchronicity. And a popular term is in the zone. The psychology of flow has been studied in the last decade and a half especially. It's an internal alignment of your energy field. Now, your choices set this into motion just as other choices can derail this process. You set your day in motion when you wake up happy and excited about what you'll do that day. Days when nothing goes right can usually be traced to an instant when you become disconnected from yourself, like a bad feeling or a disturbing thought, or just stubbing your toe when you get out of bed. You create your state of mind and set your path on a particular route. So the secret, rather than being about wishing for something and getting, is about understanding and refocusing personal energy. An example would be infertility. For someone who has an urgency or an ambivalence about getting pregnant, this state of mind can sabotage intention and create a response in the body that can prevent pregnancy. When this release of urgency and positive focus gets aligned, it can change the result. A study was done on couples who had three consecutive spontaneous miscarriages, and when they did work in the way that I'm describing, over 90% were then able to successfully conceive. Now, the law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works equally for positive or negative thoughts, good things or bad things. You keep coming back to what you run away from. You attract what you resist because you engage it with focused emotion. So this is something to really be aware of. The most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't. Now, most focus is outside awareness. The challenge is to consciously target the specific outcomes you want. And one way to do this is to discover all the things that you focus on that you don't want, to make a list as you notice thinking about them. This list will cue your radar for early recognition. Then, each time you notice a thought drifting or created in that direction, you stop and think about what you do want. So be specific about what you do want, not just what you don't want in disguise. I want a reliable car. Focus on the idea the car may break down and need repair. I want a relationship in which I'm treated well. Well, that focuses on the expectation that you might not be treated well, and you have to reverse it. So what I'd like to do with you is an articulate your unconscious exercise. Do this test to see how it works. And after, I'm going to make a statement. And after each statement I make, I want you to silently say to yourself, your wish is my command, and to be aware of what you experience in your body. So I make a statement, you silently say, your wish is my command, and then take a reading of your body. I'm tired. I'm late. I'm eating healthily all day. I just worked out and feel invigorated. Now, what was your experience? Did you notice anything different physically with each of the responses?
Yeah.
What did you notice specifically?
Whatever you said, that's what my mind went to.
Okay, did you feel it in your body? I mean, when I said I'm tired or I'm late or I'm overweight, did you feel it in your body? Did you feel something different than eating healthily, worked out, feel invigorated?
Not like drastically.
Okay, I'm talking about subtleties here. But this is an illustration. Usually, you experience a beginning read of a different kind of experience in your body, because everything that you focus on, you bring about, and your unconscious will say, your wish is my command. So this thinking is not magical. It requires discipline. That's why most people don't have spectacular results. To be aware of your focus and consciously direct your focus in exactly the way that you want. So spectacular results require mind and brain consistency. For 20 to 25 days without reverting back to the old pattern. You'll naturally be ambivalent and resist change, but just don't act on it. So what this means is the pen is in your hand to write your story. And since you're writing your script, are your thoughts worthy? Are they worthy of you? A couple of quotes here that really summarizes a great deal. And the first is from William James, the father of American psychology, that was said over 115 years ago. Wisdom is learning what to overlook. And the second, quote from my favorite grandmother, the secret critic, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Now, one final vignette on focus. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, my son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion. Grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his granddad, which wolf wins? The wise Cherokee simply said, the one you feed. Number three, visualize changes. The prototype study in this area, basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into three groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for a month. A second group, 30 minutes practice daily at free throws. And a third group practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws, nothing but net, for at least 5 minutes daily for 30 days. They were tested at the end of 30 days. First group, no practice, 0% improvement. Second group, Actual practice, 30 minutes daily, 24% improvement. Third group, practice by visualization only, 23% improvement. Now, since then, subsequent studies have shown that visualization only can achieve superior results to actual practice because you don't miss and then have to do a recalibration each time. On brain imaging, visualization, the same sequence of firing occurs as when somebody's actually shooting. So, create a vision, then look back to see the path to get there. The most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a vision. Every image draws it to you and toward the conclusion. An image is like a goal. If you create a negative image, like I can't dance, or I'll look really goofy if I cut loose, or I don't think I can do technology, this will be a destination that you're drawn, that your brain will draw you to. If you picture for yourself as not being able to dance, then when you go to your party, the image says, I can't dance. You'll stay in that zone of that self-image, and you'll create the experience. You can create something else instead. Create an image of your goal and live into it. There's a chapter in the book I'm going to send you, Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction guide, about visualization and a systematic and scientific use of visualization and of affirmations, the story that supports the visual. The visualization is rewiring your brain, and affirmations revise mind software. So I'll send that to you in fairly short order. Now, here's a focus and visualization exercise, just a practical, simple example. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture what you'll look like at your ideal weight, and then look at these pictures daily in your mind. Write down your ideal body weight range. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body. Now, remember, it has to be your body at ideal weight. You can't lose weight and suddenly have Alicia Keys' body. So, on your true body self. Don't focus on losing weight. That's a negative focus. Don't focus on fat thoughts like slow metabolism or hereditary body size or slow thyroid or the spirit of Great Aunt Sally that channeled the curse of large thighs. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. Visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. Think and feel as though your desire is manifest. Create your body as your life intentionally. And remember again the ABCs, ask, believe, create. Just a brief mention of the art of a vision. Visualization is a way to rehearse for the future. It takes both art and science to establish a vision. You're programming a future memory. Not too long ago, a group of executives asked me to present a seminar to them on writing a first book. The first thing I did was to ask, Have any of you seen a yellow Jeep in the last month? And there were 24 people there. One person raised his hand. Then I went through a visualization exercise with them. Let's do it now. Close your eyes and imagine a yellow Jeep. Visualize the specific detail of how it looks as you walk toward it, and then walk all the way around it. Notice the tires, the chrome, paint, configuration of the body. Come back and open the passenger door. Look at the seat, the steering wheel, the dash. As you get inside, smell the interior. Touch the seat. Feel how secure the seat is holding you. Put your hands on the wheel and then drop your hand to turn it on. As you start it, listen to it run. Feel the vibration. Look through the windshield and imagine what it will look like as you're driving. Now, turn it off, and as you get out, close the door and hear the solid sound of the door. As you walk away, turn around one more time and look at the Jeep and take it in. Now, I ask these executives to contact me if any of them happen to see a yellow Jeep in the next week. In the first 3 days, 22 of the 24 contacted me to say they'd spotted a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened? The number of yellow Jeeps in the greater Houston area did not increase. What someone sees, what appears on our radar screen, is determined by our belief and our assumption. A yellow Jeep was pre-programmed as possibility. For example, the most common reason people don't earn more money and accumulate wealth is they don't see themselves capable of it. I can tell you how much money people will make by listening to their assumption. Once someone genuinely sees himself or herself as capable of doing something, all sorts of things begin to happen. The amount of wealth or yellow Jeeps existing in the world doesn't change. You just code your radar for possibility. It's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they've become probably a part of your identity. But a vision starts at the other end, in your brain, at the successful outcome. If someone has a fear of success or a fear of failure, this visioning process bypasses that fear and etches the successful outcome. And there'll be more in that chapter about how to do it specifically. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, "Start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going." Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. So let's look for a moment at the science of the vision now, as we just looked at the art of the vision. Recent PET scans, positron emission tomography of the brain, have confirmed several things about visualization. Visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain. The brain assimilates a mental picture, whether the stimulus is actual from the optic nerve or imagined. The brain can't tell the difference between a mental image and an actual image. Replays of the visualization, like repeating the vision of successfully attaining a goal, programs neural networks and neuronal pathways to more strongly etch the experience. Mental visualization of a complex movement can actually improve performance. PET scans have also established that thoughts result in physical changes in your brain. And you know, for example, by simply picturing a danger, you can trigger the entire body responses of flight and fight. So when you program your unconscious, you're actually creating a future memory to live into. Your brain can't tell who conjured it, you or reality. And the more detailed your visual image, the more specifically etched your brain will be. Now, here's the key. You don't make the brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. Otherwise, it doesn't register or it gets extruded as noise. So this may be why, for example, 95% of people who diet gain back their weight, plus 1% to 2%. They don't reprogram their body image. For example, if you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live that experience. You then incorporate as part of your identity rather than it being just a behavior that you do. While your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can, and your conscious mind must incorporate an evolving story to include and assemble this energy as part of the story. In other words, this is what we were talking about, the most common force, the most powerful force of the human psyche is to revert back to our core identity. Now, we'll return to this again in the final step of Program New Identity. But this is why we have to help a client incorporate an evolving model of what they're doing as who they really are in addition to behavior. We'll revisit this. So, the key elements here are three. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly, or they'll be eliminated. Secondly, consciously incorporate this new vision in an ongoing way to be metabolized as part of the self. Otherwise, you'll lose the vision and revert back to your identity. And third, be very specific about the experience of having achieved the goal. Involve all the senses. Notice that when I did the Jeep visualization, all the senses were involved and all the senses were integrated into that three-dimensional experience. So a margin note here is write it down for review. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory, then it's gone, unless it's emotionally significant or you work to log it in. Visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Here's a simple example. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 on two occasions by one score. He had 299s. Everything else was in the triple digit. To preserve his sanity, he decided to visualize golf. He spent his entire day visualizing golf. He would get up, imagine getting dressed, driving to his favorite country club, getting out, warming up, stretching, smelling the flowers, looking at the sky. Every shot he made, he would walk step by step to the ball. He did this 7 days a week for 7 years. And after he was released from his captivity, his first outing, he shot a 74. The power of a vision of mind over matter. The fourth element to map changes, insight changes the brain. At the moment of an insight, an aha experience, three different parts of the brain light up. A whole new set of neural connections is created. An aha experience activates the brain to release stimulating neural hormones. When someone is given information, for example, a directive, an order, or facts, nothing happens. This stimulation, the aha experience, the moment of insight, vaults someone into a state of mind that is more integrative, synthetic, and creative than before. An important part of this insight-induced change is that sustained attention hardwires it into the brain circuit. Number five, take action. The world will not pay you for what you know or what you intend. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize are all important, but payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. It may not be perfect, but they self-correct and keep moving forward, learn from their mistakes, and produce results. This may be why a group of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure something out, but really struggle to make it happen. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the second semester of community college owns a bunch of real estate on the west side of town. And six, identity transformation. This is the P of the roadmap, and we're coming back to it. A new experience or idea needs to be focused on consistently and frequently When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experience and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a component of one's identity. Otherwise, it's not integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or simply attributed to luck or circumstance. The most important thing about a goal is having one. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. So here's a summary now. This is a summary of the science, the neuroscience of change in mentor coaching. We focus on solutions rather than understanding why, on co-creating options rather than giving advice or dictates. Now, since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. The first requirement, the first step, is what? In the roadmap, recognizing authorship and then owning the story, followed by understanding, assessing, and then mapping change. Peter Drucker said the most pressing task is to teach people how to learn. So, let's review some important elements to map change. The first step almost always is empathically resonating with the client. This creates a common ground. It creates a regulation of a state of mind in order to manage emotion. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain plus right brain, intellectual plus emotional. And as we've talked before, state always comes first, then story and strategy. And the reason state comes first is the state of mind determines the meaning we're going to attach to something, even if we're going to perceive it or not, but the meaning that we attach to something, and the meaning determines the behavior, much like I gave in the example at the beginning of conversational intelligence, of how the first few words can boot up a particular mindset and how that can determine everything that follows. Secondly, concentrate on new behaviors rather than problems in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying a problem won't solve it. Next, co-create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to lay new mental maps. Facilitate insight rather than give advice. And people can usually determine between inquiries that prompt insight from attempts at persuasion. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. The power is in the focus. We get what we focus on, not what we want. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Facilitate new behaviors and guide the development and actualization of new mental maps. Collaboratively conceptualize the mental map, the internal model of the client, in order to help facilitate a new level of mastery within their system. In the event of diversion to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas. Remember that the power is in the focus and that permanent change arises from the consistency of that focus. Knowledge conveyed passively is inert. Knowledge generated through insight can change both mind and brain. And finally, conceptualize the meta map with the client in order to master and internalize the process. This helps create an outline, an overview, to incorporate a new experience as a storyline and ultimately as part of an evolving identity. Any thoughts or questions or aspects that you'd like to discuss? First, any clarification of anything that we talked about? Is this beginning to make sense to you about how to listen, how to deconstruct the story of what you're hearing, and then begin to plan how you're going to help someone create a new way of proceeding, to look at possibility, to look at things in a different way in order to move ahead?
Yes, slowly getting more clear. I can't have a hard time hearing it right now.
Well, it's a process. There's no question.
I know. It is,
a lot
yeah.
of material, and I know I'm not doing this in a in an ideal seminar format where we go back and forth and discuss and develop it, simply because there's so much information I want to convey to you and want you to be exposed to so that you can incorporate it, capitalize it in your own way, and continue your own study with this, but mostly to make it your own.
Right.
Here's an example of what I mean about really metabolizing the material and making it your own. I worked with a fellow many, many years ago who was an abstract expressionist. And he had done some work to kind of quieten demons inside, and he got tremendously more creative in doing that, and he moved to an internationally known artist. And he described what was different about his work. Can I get a management of the background noise? Your microphone is picking up movement and objects in the background. If anything is moving, go ahead and mute, and then you can come back to unmute *6. And he said, if you and I were to go to a canvas and I emote and get in a zone and create an abstract expressionist piece of art, and you were to attempt to do the same, what would inform me would be 15 years of formal training, of line drawing, of color, of anatomy. But while I'm in the state of mind of creativity, I'm not an observer. I'm not in a thinking part of my brain. What I'm doing is I'm in a zone, a creative zone, and I emote on the canvas. Now, later I can deconstruct it and say, this comes from this kind of study. This is due to this. This is the influence of a particular area. But while it's happening, it's just a being unconsciously competent and being well informed so that everything is directed in a particular way. This is the kind of experience that each of you will, I think, more and more have. Instead of thinking about, well, what should I say, or well, what does psychology tell me, or what would Kruger say? You'll automatically respond in a contingent conversation with your client and engage in a way to help move them toward their goals. Later, you could deconstruct it and say, well, I know I got this from here, or this is informed by an aspect of quantum physics. But at the time, you're simply having a conversation. You're not thinking about what to say. You're not thinking about, well, should I do this, or is there an exercise that's going to help me? But you're immersed and engaged in that contingent conversation. And by that I mean client says something, you say something, client says something, you say something. So that is ultimately what you'll get to. And I know in the beginning it doesn't feel that way all the time, but that's something you'll get to, and get to where this is automatic, where it's all metabolized. Because, you know, think about it. Once you take a bite of broccoli, you don't visualize molecules of broccoli going to all parts of your body and nurturing aspects of your body. Once you take in that broccoli, it's part of you. It's no longer broccoli. It's part of you. So this is the same with this process. This will become part of you, and it will inform what you do and how you do it so that you can benefit people in substantial ways in whatever way you choose. But I know in the beginning it all feels a little awkward and a little different. And if you think about adjusting or amending your style to incorporate this, it may feel really sort of awkward in the beginning. And that's very understandable. Remember this experience, because every client you work with, when they engage in any kind of change, the first reaction, the immediate reaction, will be a discomfort because they're leaving their comfort zone. They're leaving their accustomed, well-grooved in their brain way of doing things and trying something new. So you can empathically resonate with that and even help them reframe it, as we've talked before about this discomfort is very understandable because it means you're in new territory beyond where you've been before. Thoughts, questions, things that would be helpful to talk about? We still have a few minutes.
This is Robin. I think
Please. For
me, just doing it for myself, like taking my story and trying to lay it out and examine it and think, okay, you know, what if I were the client, you know, how would I react to this? And then just kind of do it as a client for myself first. I think that'll help me. I think it'll help me for the pieces to all come together and make sense.
I think you're absolutely right, and that's why I recommended at the beginning to do the exercises, to do this work yourself, because the very best preparation you can have helping a client with their stories is to be very clear of your story initially, to know that story, be very comfortable inside it in its evolving way and through your own voice. Then you can best help a client develop theirs. So I absolutely agree with you. And that's why I recommend for each segment of what we do, whatever the feeding assignment is, to do as many of the exercises and work tools as you can yourself, because I think it will be a catalyst in itself. And it will make it more your material. It'll help you metabolize it. It'll make it part of your system. And it'll help you get an idea of what you may want to use with what client at what time. Thanks. Yeah, absolutely. Other thoughts? Is someone on a cell phone and outside? I hear a lot of wind. I hear some wind noise. The reason I'm mentioning it is one of the recommendations I would make, because most of you will probably do work, at least initially, by telephone to consult with somebody by telephone if you do face-to-face work. I do 100% of my work by telephone. And I would think that you would each want a landline and a dedicated number so that you can be totally professional and so that clarity can be paramount in terms of there be no distraction when you're working with a client. Because you don't want a client to be distracted about, you know, noise or hearing something or doing what needs to be done. So that would be important, I think, to begin for your coaching practice.
Okay.
Other thoughts or questions? Or anything else to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I look forward to picking up with you right here next time. And I will not be, I'm going to be out of my office beginning early in the morning through the rest of the week. I'm going to spend a week at Steamboat Springs skiing, but I'll be back for our seminar next Monday. So the reason I'm saying is I may not be as readily responsive to any emails, but if there are any questions, let me know. Otherwise, we'll pick up right here, and I look forward to picking up with you right here next time. Have a great week. Bye now.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. You too.
Dr. Kruger? Hello? Que aconteceu?